John Constantine, a Hellblazer podcast.
Everybody, and welcome back. Before we get into the episode, just want to let you know that this is the free version of the podcast, and all that means is that we are way behind where I'm at in Patreon. So if you are loving this podcast and you need more John Constantine in your life, definitely go check us out at patreon.com/planes, trains, and comic books and sign up for the Hellblazer tier, where you'll get access to the entire Hellblazer library that I've recorded so far. And also, you get access to the exclusive episodes of the Planes, Trains, and Comic Books main podcast. So if any of that sounds good to you, definitely go over to patreon.com/planes, trains, and comic books, all one word, and sign up there. And with that out of the way, let's get into the issue. Today we're reading Hellblazer number 75. And just a little catch up on what was going on in the storyline before. John is stuck in some sort of hell dimension, and he was sent there by Papa Midnight, one of his magical rivals. And it took John a while, but he figured out kind of what was going on. And so now he's trying to figure out how to get out of here. And luckily for him, there was another man inside this hell dimension that offered to help him. And that man was John F. Kennedy, who apparently has been stuck in this hell dimension since he got shot in the head and hasn't been able to leave because he's such an icon to the American people that through their will and want of him being like the hope of America, they've actually kept him in this hell dimension. And he has come to John because he needs help as well. So he offers John a deal that if John will help him take over the White House so he can be president again, he will help John find a way out of this place. So they got to Washington, D.C. and to the White House. And as they were going through some secret tunnels that JFK knew about, a woman appeared in front of them. And this woman ended up being the sister of Papa Midnight, who he murdered and has been using her to control John in this hell dimension. And she offers John a deal as well because she knows that he is a Magus who is very powerful and he can actually help her get out of here and get revenge on her brother who murdered her. And at the same time, because this hell dimension is kind of controlled by her, she can help John escape. So John does help her out and he actually has to burn the mark that her brother cut into her soul. And this works, it does free her. So now she's going to help John get out of the hell dimension. But once they get out of the tunnels and back up to the grass in front of the White House, they are approached by a bunch of Native American skeletons riding on horseback that have also been stuck in this hell dimension, and they are asking for a way out too. And that is where we left off in the last issue. So first things first, with issue 75, we got the cover. We see a very old-looking Uncle Sam who's got an evil, sinister smile, and he's pointing out at us, just like in those old war propaganda posters where Uncle Sam was pointing at the person walking by and saying, "I want you." Except in this, he's definitely got a more sinister smile. And we see that this is written by Garth Ennis with art by Steve Dillon. And we start off on the first page exactly where we left off with John, JFK, and Sadella, Papa Midnight's sister, looking at this band of skeleton Native American warriors. And as John reaches for a cigarette, he realizes that his box is empty and he says, "We're in trouble." And JFK replies, "Despite the administration's policy of remaining noncommittal, without proper knowledge of the facts, I can only agree." And John says, "Nicely put." And Sadella is also staring at the Native American warriors, and she asks, "What will we do?" And John just starts to walk away from the Native Americans saying, "Circle the wagons. I don't know, love. They're probably just ghosts. Half the stuff around here is just bloody special effects to put the wind up you anyway. Come on, Sodom. I bet they're not even here for us." But just as he takes a couple steps, some arrows fly from the Native Americans and thud into the ground in front of John Constantine's feet. And as we turn the page, we get a full page splash of John looking kind of angry as he side eyes the Native American group without really turning around. And we see the name of this issue is Damnation's Flame Part 4, Hail to the Chief. Then we cut to the office of Papa Midnight. And the last we saw of him, once John had released Papa's control over Sadella, he was kind of freaking out, and then we cut away from him, so we haven't seen him since then. And we see the skinny white guy, Zierke, that kind of started all this by seeing John in that bar, lets himself into Papa's giant office, and then starts to look for Papa, but he can't find him. And he searches around saying, "Papa? You here, Papa? Is now a bad time? Listen, we gotta talk about this shit with Marino's boys, okay? I don't trust that freaking guinea to piss straight. Never mind. But he stops in his tracks as he sees the altar that Papa always has set up with his sister's skull on it has been pushed over and the skull is smashed. Then he hears a noise and he says, "Christ!" And then he looks over to see what the noise was from and he sees Papa Midnight sitting on the ground. And this is like the weirdest thing he's ever seen because Papa Midnight is usually very strong looking. He's always got an air about himself of, you know, superiority. But at this moment, he's on the ground. He's holding his knees with his hands and he has a confused and also terrified kind of look on his face. And when Zerky sees this, he also gets a terrified look on his face because he's not used to Papa looking like that. Then we come back to John and the Native Americans, and what looks like the head of the Native Americans says to John, "What we want is out." So it seems they have come just like Sedella did to John because he is a powerful Magus and they think that he has the ability to escape this hell dimension. So John looks back at the head Native American and says, "Well, don't look at me." So the Native American says back, "You are from other lands. You know the way in. You know the way out. Why will you not help us? We suffer greatly in this place. Watch." And then the Native American knocks another arrow and shoots it into John's chest. And John, of course, is stunned and he says, "What?" And then he grabs the arrow and he tries to pull it out and he says, "Bloody hell! No!" And as he struggles, the Native American says, "Do not fight it. It is a thing of spirit, a gift from the peyote god. It will show you. It gives visions." And with that, John's eyes kind of roll back into his head, and he begins to have a vision. And it seems his body is kind of just floating in an empty white space. And then he's seeing different glimpses of parts of America, like the open deserts with the big tall rock plateaus and the Statue of Liberty holding the torch. And over these, the Native American narrates, "Have you ever wondered why the sun sets in the west? Why that is where the day ends when the great darkness comes? Yet across the world, tired eyes turn west, and tired minds dream of brave new worlds across the sea, and new beginnings for hearts that only know despair. So they come from everywhere, walking, sailing, flying for utopia, and lo, the golden door is marked with a lamp held high." And that lamp would be the torch from the Statue of Liberty. And as we turn the page, we move to a different part of the vision, and we can see what looks like a back alley with Uncle Sam in a leather jacket, and he's smoking a big cigar. And in case you don't know what Uncle Sam is, he was a mascot on World War II propaganda posters that had like an American flag top hat, and he was like an older white gentleman. He had a big gray goatee, and in the posters, he would always be pointing out at whoever is walking by and saying, "I want you." And that was him saying, you know, you should join the military, basically. So we see this Uncle Sam figure standing, leaning against a light pole. Like I said, he's wearing a leather jacket, which is pretty weird for him. And he also has some six shooters around his waist. And he's also wearing what looks like leather pants and cowboy boots to go with the six shooters. And he is holding onto a chain that is connected to a metal collar that is around a bear's neck. And there is blood coming from this bear's mouth. And his paws look all bloody as well. And then on the ground in the alley in front of this light post that Uncle Sam is leaning against, we see a woman who looks passed out on the ground. She has a Roman helmet on her head that looks like it's pulled up so you can see her long blonde hair. She has a dirty white dress on because I guess she's been on the ground. And next to her is a heroin needle, and it looks like it's fallen to the ground after she's injected that into her arm. And leaning against the wall next to her, and on the face of the shield is the Red Cross that's on the British flag. And over these panels, the narration says, "So how did it come to this? The Russian bear lies chained and kept, his own heart shat across his fur from when he chewed it out. And what that proves is patience is a virtue. And Britannia's a whore that's been raped in an alley and left to die. But keep her supplied and she won't be complaining. She's always happy not to face the truth. Any good whore master knows it. Give them what they think they want and they'll come running back. Some of them will fight." As we turn the page, we see that Uncle Sam is now standing in the alley like he's about to do a shootout. He's got both his hands hovering over his guns. And there's a young woman running away from him in this alley, and she's definitely scared. And the narration continues, "God, how they'll fight. But one way or another, you'll get them all in the end." And as she runs away, Uncle Sam pulls out one of his six shooters, and he takes aim and pulls the trigger, and the bullet hits the young woman in the head. So she falls down with her head exploded and her body landing on the hard concrete of this alley. And the narration continues, That's the way it's been since time immemorial. Whores and their whore masters, all across the world. But not till now has one pimp risen, made the others into whores. Even enemies who hate you, they don't know you work their strings. Hope you know that nothing's stable. Times will change, and yours is coming. So over the first bit of that narration, we see Uncle Sam looking pretty pleased with himself after shooting that woman, and he's even twirling the gun in his hand like he's saying to himself, good shot. But then as we turn the page, we see the Japanese flag is coming up behind him, and he looks kind of scared. And the narration continues. Hope your ass is greased and ready. There is further west than you, you know. Then we see the group of the skeleton Native American warriors, and it looks like they're watching this. And the leader's narration continues, saying, we saw this thing grow and prosper, suckle like a babe on its brave new world. The white man moved west, and what could we do? We couldn't fight him forever. He gave us blankets and land to settle, but the blankets were rotten with smallpox, and the land was barren. And all that was left was the Trail of Tears. We were the first to fall before this thing. We saw the others fall one by one, and there are more to come. And as the skeleton Native American warriors stare at John, who's still floating in the white empty space, he looks at them and he says, what am I? What do you want me to? But he's cut off by the head Native American, who continues saying, show us pity. You've seen what this thing is and what it does. You know we've suffered longest. Show us the way out. And John replies, look, I'm telling you, I bloody swear, I don't know. And the Native American leader looks at him and says, lies. No. Truth. And it looks like the skeleton of the Native American leader is very saddened by this because he says, he doesn't know the way. His path lies through betrayal. He is no good to us. He carries the taint of the old world as much as any of them. And as John hangs upside down in front of them, he says, for Christ's sake, what did I do? And the Native American replies, your past is always with you. And John yells, no! Then we see the torch in the Statue of Liberty's hand burst into flames. And the Native American says, and the lamp in the hand at the golden door, it burns with the flame of damnation. Just another white man. And John falls through the whiteness as the Native Americans disappear, yelling, no! And then we cut out of John's vision back to the Hell Dimension where Sedella and JFK are standing looking at John's passed out body on the White House lawn. Then we cut to the homeless men's shelter where John's body is in some sort of comatose state as his mind is away in this Hell Dimension. And we see standing around him are the three homeless men that have been bothering John as he's just sitting there not moving. And the man named Murray, who was the one who peed on him at the beginning of this arc, says, you got it? And we see the third man named Russ say to Murray, never miss it. And we see he's holding out a bottle of lighter fluid to Murray. And the other man, who's named Rickles, if you remember, he was the one that took John's coat that was covered with piss in the last issue, he says, Jesus, Murray, I don't know about this. And Murray tells him to shut up and also calls him a slur for a gay person. And Rickles yells back, you want to stop calling me that, asshole? Look, pissing on him is one thing, but setting his ass on fire? But Murray just continues to open the bottle of lighter fluid, and he says to Rickles, why don't you go talk to the mix, Rickles? They appreciate a little bit of ass like you. And then he looks back at John and says, okay, pretty boy. And then he sprays the lighter fluid all over John, and Rickles says, for Christ's sake, hey, screw you, Murray. And he walks off. Then Murray reaches out a hand to Russ and says, give me the lighter, Russ. And Russ says to him, you ain't got it? And Murray turns to him with disbelief and says, I thought you... Jesus Christ, couldn't even get a freaking lighter. We're burning this prick. And Russ replies, not my fault. Then we cut back to the Hell Dimension where John is passed out on the grass still, and we can see that he has vomited, and his narration says over this, and this is your brain on drugs. Then John wakes up, and as he begins to push himself up from the ground, Kennedy says, this administration appreciates the difficulty of your position, but would like to remind you of your commitment to assisting the administration regain its former office. But John doesn't reply to him. He just puts his head in his hand like he's got a headache, and he says, just one laugh after another with you, isn't it? Then Sedella walks towards John on the ground, and she says, I am leaving now. And John looks at her and says, Here, hold on a bleeding minute. You're meant to be showing me the way out. And she looks at John and says, there is nothing keeping either of us here, John Constantine. I am moving on. I will stop to visit my brother on the way,
but my time here is finished. All you need to do is wake up.
And with that, Sadella just vanishes in front of them. And John turns to JFK and says,
easier said than done. All right, let's get on with it.
So John and JFK walk towards the White House. And as they do, JFK says, the administration finds your willingness to honor your earlier commitment highly encouraging and promises to bear this in mind after the present incumbent has been ousted.
And John says, deal's a deal, isn't it? And I wouldn't worry about afterwards, all right? Once this is over and done with, I'll be off like a cat with 1,000 volts up it, if I can work out how.
And then he says under his breath,
wake up me arse.
So as they're walking into the White House, John's narration says,
deal's a deal? Since when have you believed bollocks like that, Constantine?
And as they walk in, it's super dark inside, there's no lights on. So John pulls out his lighter and flicks it on, and with that light, they can kind of make their way towards the Oval Office. And as they walk, John's narration continues, saying,
when did I ever make a deal I had the slightest intention of sticking to? My life's littered with suckers left in the lurch and served up on platters. It's all this fresh start shit that's screwing me up. I'm kidding myself if I think I can leave a crucial bit of me behind. The right-bleeding bastard bit.
Then as they get to the broken doors of the Oval Office, JFK says, this is the entrance to the Oval Office. Our adversary will be within, in all likelihood. And as John stares at the door, his narration continues.
Sadella didn't just mean wake up, did she? She meant wake up and smell the coffee.
And with this, it seems like John has figured something out. And so he looks at JFK and he points towards the door and says,
after you, Squire.
And as they walk into the Oval Office, the chair behind the desk is turned backwards so we can't see who's sitting in it. And the office is now lit up with a bright orange light that is coming through the windows. And the man sitting in the chair that we can't see says,
howdy.
And without turning around so John and JFK can't see him, the man continues,
I'm sure glad you boys are here, working on my speech, State of the Union address tonight. Could use some help with it. Been wondering whether to go for something traditional, you know? Something about not abiding half-slave and half-free and all that. Or like that line of yours about not asking what America can do for a fella, but what he can do for America. Hey, that's a good'un, boy. Some sneaky shit in there. Cleverest line I ever heard out of ya. Better than that one about you being a hamburger, I tell ya. Or, say, Jackie, darling, Dallas is right nice this time of year.
And as the man in the chair says this, he begins to stand from his chair with his back still towards them, but we can see in his hand he's got a big top hat. And as the man begins to stand from the chair, John definitely looks alarmed. And as we turn the page, we see Abraham Lincoln turn around, but John is not alarmed from that. He's alarmed because it's not just Abraham Lincoln. It is the First of the Fallen dressed to look like Abraham Lincoln. So as the First of the Fallen turns around fully and looks at John all surprised, he asks,
like the accent?
But John doesn't reply. JFK actually looks at the First and says,
the administration strongly condemns your remarks and therefore issues the following ultimatum. Unless you remove your person from this territory immediately and relinquish all claims to controlling it, a state war will exist between us. The ultimatum is effective as of this moment. As you can see, the administration is not without an ally and will not hesitate to call on him for assistance.
But the First just gives a smile and his eyes flash over to JFK's right, and JFK turns to see John has vanished and left JFK on his own. Then the First turns to JFK and says,
if it's any consolation, I know how you feel. He and I have business of our own to resolve. I knew it wouldn't be now, but I thought I'd sit in on this affair anyway. I liked watching him in pain. He's not escaping for long, believe me. Now then, I must admit, I've seen few souls less able to accept their fate. I'm impressed. 30 years. And even then, all you thought you had to do was become president again. Don't you know my term of office never ends?
And then the First walks around his desk and stands in front of JFK and says,
will you let me help you? All you need to do is give me your hands.
And a very nervous JFK says,
he assured the administration he would assist me in the matter of your removal. He made a clear commitment.
Then as we turn the page, we get a full page splash of John running away into a black void, and his narration says,
the state I'm in? See you, Squire.
So John is totally leaving JFK without any help at all. Then we cut back to the men's homeless shelter, where Murray has found a lighter finally, and has just flicked the flame on, and he's saying,
about time something frickin' worked around here.
But it seems John has begun to move a little bit, because Russ looks at John and says,
dude waking up.
And Murray sees John coming to as well, and he says, "Come on, pretty boy. Wake your friggin' ass up and see what I got for you." And as Murray brings the flame close to John's face, John fully wakes up and yells, "Jesus!" And then he shoves his fingers in Murray's eye, which causes Murray to drop the lighter, causing the flame to go out. And John immediately stands up and begins to run away as Murray screams, "Jesus freaking Christ! Ah!" And Rush just kind of smiles and stares at Murray saying, "Shit, first freaking entertainment we were gonna have in here. Gonna have to go back to watching Mick screw dudes up the ass." And Murray screams, "My freaking eye!" Then we cut back to Papa Midnight's office where he is still sitting on the ground, clutching his knees. And all of a sudden, he hears someone say, "Linton," which is Papa Midnight's given name. And as he looks around scared, the voice continues, "Don't look for me, Linton. Just listen to me. It's Sadella. I know how you're feeling now that your anger has turned to fear. I've had 30 years of it, but you don't have to be afraid anymore, little brother. Your wait is over. I have to go now, but before I do, there is something I want you to do for me. First of all, you should shower and change your clothes. Then leave your building, summon a taxi, and tell the driver to take you to 5th Avenue between 33rd and 34th Streets. And when you get there..." And then we cut away from what she was saying to Papa Midnight having already showered and changed his clothes and following the rest of her directions, because as he's leaving, he hails a taxi, and the doorman is confused because, you know, he works for Papa Midnight, and he says, "Sir, can I get the limo? Don't you want... sir?" But Papa Midnight doesn't say anything to him as he gets into the taxi that stops in front of him. And when he gets in, he says to the driver, "5th, between 33rd and 34th. And as the cab driver pulls out, he says, "This is Empire State. You going sightseeing?" And Midnight responds, "No. I'm going to throw myself from the 86th floor." And to this, the cab driver just replies, "Kind of different." Then we cut to John walking the streets of New York, and he has got all new clothes. And his narration says, "Try dancing up and down the street when you look like shit and stink of piss and lighter fluid, smart arse. Bloody doorman at the Ritz would have turfed me in the gutter if I hadn't put the zap on him, the git. But yeah, frigate. Once I was in, all I had to do was nick the fat bloke's wallet, clean up, then go shopping for clothes. This thing'll do till I get home, I suppose." And as John is walking, he walks by a hot dog vendor, and he actually gets a hot dog for himself, and the guy says, "Enjoy." And John replies, "You bet." And this is probably because he's starving, because he's been in like a comatose state for a couple days, I'm thinking. So as John takes a bite out of his hot dog, his narration continues saying, "It's nothing new, this place. It's just the same old shit out west. And if it whispers lies you want so badly to believe, don't." And as he says "don't," he throws the rest of the hot dog in a trash bin next to him, so I guess it wasn't very good. And then he lights up his cigarettes, and his narration continues saying, "Just stick to the essential truths. First of the day, always taste the best." And as he takes a puff of his cigarette, he says, "Ah." Then we come to the Irish pub where all this started, called the Blarney Stone, and John is inside talking to the bartender who he went crazy in front of, and the bartender's saying, "Vertical epilepsy? I've never heard of that in me life." And John replies, "Nah, it's not very common. Makes you run like hell instead of rolling about the place, you know?" And the bartender suspiciously asks, "And that's why you went charging out of here last night, is it? I thought you'd gone loony the way you were screaming." And John replies, "Yeah, it's a pain in the arse. I've got pills for it, but I'm always forgetting to take them." And as the bartender pours a drink for John, he says, "Terrible thing, terrible. Here you are now." John takes the glass and says, "Cheers, Peter." And then his narration says, "Suppose if anything good come out of this friggin' shambles, if America gave me anything at all, then it'd be a reminder that this is a world of idiots and bastards." And then John's thought is cut off as someone yells from behind him, "Jesus friggin' Christ!" And as John and the bartender turn to the front door, we see a man walking through that's covered in blood. And the bartender says, What bleeding happened to..." But the man coming through the door cuts him off saying, "It's horrible! I was just walking along. This guy, he must have jumped off the goddamn Empire State. The blood, the frickin' blood. He burst open, man. Look at me. I'm covered in his frickin' blood. He's spread all over the street out there." And as the man is saying this, he's walking further into the bar. So Peter, the bartender, says, "Well, will you, for Jesus' sake, get the hell out of here? You're dripping that shite all over the place." But the man doesn't pay any attention to that, and he just keeps talking, saying, "Like a melon, like a freaking melon, for Christ's sake." And then John's narration continues saying, "So make your choice. That's the American way, Pard. And then he smiles and lights a cigarette. Then we cut back to the Hell Dimension, and JFK is walking down an empty road again in the middle of the desert, and the narration says, "The man with the hole in his head hit Route 66 around sundown. The pain was gone now, and he was kind of glad about that, but it seemed like everything else was going with it." And we see that as he's walking, there's a trail of blood behind him, and there's chunks of brain matter in the blood trail as well. And JFK is singing the song, "My Country, 'Tis of Thee," and the narration continues, "Poor bastard shit his pants, just couldn't stop himself. But for some reason, he couldn't smell anything anymore, so it wasn't so bad. All he could remember was how to keep walking, and a song he'd always liked when he was growing up. But the sky got darker, and the night grew colder, and his memories dimmed. And after a while, he forgot the words." And as we turn the page, we get a full page splash of JFK walking down Route 66. And this time, not only does he have a hole in his head from where he got shot, but his arms have been torn off. So it seems the first of the fallen has torn off his arms. I'm not sure if it's for him to suffer more so that he can't even remember who he is in this hell dimension, or if this will help him pass on because eventually he won't remember who he is. And we leave with JFK humming the song because he can't remember the words anymore. And that is the end of this issue. Now, interestingly, this is a double-sized issue, so it actually continues with a second story. And in this story, it is the first time John met Kit while he was visiting his friend Brendan in Ireland. And I'm not sure if it has any significance other than to give some more context with the relationships John has had with Kit and Brendan in the past. So I'm not going to read that one, but if in the future something comes up from that little story, then I'll explain what happened in it and you won't miss anything. So that, my friends, is the end of the Damnation's Flame arc. And that was a pretty interesting story. It definitely had a lot of stuff about America's sort of history and things of its past that haven't been fully addressed that kind of tarnish the idealism of America. So if you guys have any comments, questions, or suggestions, you can email me at planes, trains, and comic books, all one word, at gmail.com. And we will see you on the next one.